Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Paid after betrayal.
I didn't see it coming. Life can be so unpredictable. After losing my dad, it made me think about my family if something were to happen to me. The mortgage, car payments, and all the other bills. Even things like our annual summer vacation would be out of reach. I had heard about life insurance through Ethos and how easy it was to get coverage. They were right. I knew it was time to stop putting it off and get life insurance right now. I got on my computer and went to ethoslife.com. In just 10 minutes, I was covered. And boom, family protected. Thanks to Ethos, my family won't have to worry about the bills if the unpredictable happens to me.
Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as $1 a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at ethoslife.com/audio. That's ethoslife.com/audio.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast back for another week. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host there, and I'm joined once again by our rank god, Mr. Sam Tai. How you doing, mate?
Hello, my friend. Yes, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, I'm very good. I'm much better than I was at this point of recording last week, at the very least. And of course, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yep, good, mate. Yeah, always the three of us. We're always here, aren't we, us three?
Always the three of us.
No one else ever turns up.
Yeah, well, you know, you never know. You never know when a
special
guest
might appear. Maybe we should make a January sign-in. Who would you sign? Yeah. What are we missing? Some flair, some flamboyance.
That's me. That's my job.
Oh, you're supposed to be. Yeah, we're signing Mudrick, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's who we're bringing. We're bringing Jack Grealish in for sound bites. That's what I would like to have on the podcast. We have nothing better than sliced veg on this podcast. I think that would send us into the stratospheres, to be perfectly honest with you. We're going to be talking transfers as it is January. A little bit of a twist today, but we'll get to that in the main ranking. Before we do so, we started this episode last week, Dean, by talking about Chelsea looking to sign Enzo Fernandez. That has not gone to plan, but they are trying to rectify the situation by throwing money at something else.
Yeah, couldn't get Enzo Fernandez. They're going to sign João Felix. Nice one, Chelsea. So last week, obviously, we led this part of the pod by talking about the fact that they were trying to close in on Enzo Fernandez by the end of the week. And, you know, the deal, as we were expecting, the offer did go in. But actually, what happened was that Chelsea, in the end, agreed with us. He wasn't worth over £100 million. So they didn't offer it. They offered like €85 million, which was exactly in the ballpark of where you two were talking when I said, hang on, if this, let's just put our foot on the ball here. What's this guy actually worth? And it turns out Todd Boehly was listening and was like, oh, I'm overpaying for this guy. So he's gone to them and said, actually, I was listening to Ranks and they said it's €85 million. So I'll do that. And they said, well, that's absolutely not the terms and conditions of this transfer. He's got a release clause, mate. Go away. And yeah, that, I mean, they've basically annoyed them with that. Nothing's impossible. But right now, that deal is not happening. And if it's going to happen, then Chelsea have basically £100 million up front to now pay. There's no payment plan being set out for them as they would have initially looked at. So that's weird because they really needed a centre midfielder and it looked like they were going to overpay to get that. Instead, they're going to slightly overpay for an attacker, which I guess they kind of do need given that Pulisic and Sterling are now have suffered injuries and their attack hasn't been great anyway. Don't mind the fact that they're overpaying for this. I think Arsenal should have been doing it. I think that actually, if Chelsea do sign João Felix, one of the biggest wins from it is that he hasn't signed for Arsenal. So that's one way. Maybe they're just trying to stop Arsenal from winning the title here. They're not too worried about how it influences their own season. At the moment, as we're recording this on Tuesday, it's looking like just a straight loan for João Felix. But there's a reason for that. Most clubs don't want to bite on an obligation that's going to be in excess of 100 million because you don't know how the player is going to fit in, whether you need him. Obviously, Chelsea are signing Christopher Nkunku too, so they need to figure that out. But also, from an Atleti point of view, why offer a first option? Because there'll be other options that will be available to him in the summer anyway if this goes well. So why say, yeah, you can have him if it goes well? They don't really care, Atleti, do they? They don't care where João Felix ends up next. They just want to make sure that they get some return on their investment here. So, João Felix going to Chelsea. Fulham fan, I don't like it. If I was a Chelsea fan, I think I would like it. He's going to add something to that team. I'm not sure it's like the answer. I don't think like this solves the actual problem that they've got. But he's good. I mean, what's your hot take on João Felix at Chelsea? Does this get them into the Champions League? Does this just give them another headache for Graham Potter to contend with? What do you reckon?
It's a strange one, isn't it? Because I saw a tweet from Marty Hill yesterday on Twitter that basically said they're going to pay 11 million to try and get into the Champions League, which gets you around 15 million of revenue, which seems like a gamble that is quite a risky one. Obviously,
it's
now
not
that's
really
not
about
the
that
only
revenue, though, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. It's not really about that. It's about trying to move them into the table. It's a strange one. Like, obviously, he's a very good player. I texted my friend Max, voice note Max of this parish, who's a Chelsea fan, and I said a couple of things. I said, can you wait till Friday, please? Because Fulham are obviously playing Chelsea on Thursday and have no interest in seeing João Felix come off the bench at Craven Cottage for Chelsea. No. I said, I'm concerned that his movement is a little bit similar to Havertz's, and I'm not quite sure how the two of them work in conjunction. And I feel like they're picking up a load of players who would work really well off a number nine in the mold of Olivier Giroud, whispers it quietly. You know, it's one of those where you're
what
like,
about
oh.
A top two? What about a top two of Havertz and João Felix? Like a new Morata and João Felix?
I don't think either of them would spend any time in the bit box. In the area of the position where they're supposed to be in.
Yeah. I think that Felix has an edge on Havertz in the fact that he obviously works really hard. Look, Havertz is one of those players who I love, and I'm not, you know, taking away from him here, but he's one of those players whose language style means that if he doesn't come up with the goods on the pitch, fans can turn on him quite quickly because it doesn't look like he's working really hard. Whereas I don't think they're going to have that problem with João Felix because he's a bit of an idiot on the pitch sometimes. He bombs around and makes things happen and he often like lashes out. He's a bit of an angry footballer. And I think he has that edge on Havertz in some ways in that fans will probably take to that a little bit more than they have done with Havertz. But it's just one of those where I'm like, do you not have enough of these kind of players already? And I'm not sure that it solves any of the real issues in terms of getting someone in the areas that they need to be in that Chelsea have right now up front.
Just seems like Chelsea are determined to buy one of the players that had a wicked World Cup. And Enzo Fernandez didn't work out, young player in the tournament. So João Félix, who played every game for Portugal, I think, or at least all the important ones, and was a surprise inclusion, but did an amazing job with it and really put himself back on the map. We'll turn our attention to him. Like, we're getting one of you. Someone from this World Cup is going to come and play for Chelsea. We're not sure who it is, but it might just be João Félix. I mean, I'm with Jack in that this seems like the last mold of player that they need in terms of quantity, because they have so many. But then it's also clear that all of the ones that they've got aren't really working out for one reason or another, or don't quite fit, or aren't quite in form, or are injured. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're feeling the pressure. They're looking at the table and they're seeing how far off the pace they are in terms of where they want to be. And this is what January is for. It's for short-term fixes. It's for plugging holes. And a short-term loan for João Félix in the wake of two injuries and some poor form from others and maybe a couple of departures. This is very January, is probably how I'd put it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to consider, I mean, this is a response to losing 4-0 at Man City too. And, you know, I said it on Patreon, I think, like, that was one of the worst Chelsea lineups I've seen in 15, 20 years. Like, by the end of that game, it was just a mismatch of players from different parts of the club over two or three different...
Yeah, there was no cohesion. Eras. I don't think necessarily in terms of names, it was the worst lineup we've seen in a while, but in terms of actual...
I think it probably was.
Cohesion, I completely agree.
I think in terms of like established play, there wasn't enough. Like, of course, like some of these players, like Amari Hutchinson and stuff, like they're going to be players at the moment. Like Hutchinson, David Fofana, they shouldn't be near a fixture like that. They shouldn't be. And like this, I know Chelsea have got injury problems, but typically they wouldn't have found themselves in this situation. It's a massive issue for Graham Potter, and he's had enough on his plate. He's now got, you know, bad form and injuries and £100 million footballer to figure out. It's always a new thing thrown into the mix for him. This should be a good thing for him to have to deal with. Might not be. Might just be another complication.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, look, Cole Palmer obviously started for City and played the whole game. Rico Lewis came off the bench. There are elements of this where obviously young blood was being utilised. Sergio Gomez played from the start for City. So I can see why, you know, you're looking at that and seeing how Pep integrates those young players, and you can see what Potter's trying to do and get them into the mix. Because we sat here and talked about Rico Lewis a couple of weeks back and said what a player he's kind of emerged into in such a short space of time. That someone who Pep clearly looks like he can rely on and feels like he can rely on in big games. And so I can see why Potter is trying to embrace that youth element. And obviously we've seen Lewis Hall come in and do all right, I think, generally for Chelsea. I mean, obviously this wasn't a great experience for him. You can imagine being absolutely tormented down that flank by Riyad Mahrez is not particularly amounts of joy, I'd imagine, for a young player. But I think there's plenty of hope around Lewis Hall. And I can see why they're trying to bring these youngsters in and blood them so that there is that kind of idea of a pipeline to the first team. But equally, does it feel like the place to do it if you're getting absolutely spanked around by one of the best teams in the world but in the cup? Probably not.
But they're different scenarios as well. You know, these City youngsters get to step into a system that's it's a foundation rather than a system. They've got, you know, okay, they put three youngsters in, but then they've also got seven outfield, you know, senior players who know this system inside out. The youngsters have been playing it in training. They've been learning it for years. They slot in, they do their job, they know what it is. Chelsea don't have a system because they've already had like six systems under Potter, however many different formations. Almost always, I would add, he changes because of injury. He's had an injury here, an injury there, and Reece James goes down, then there's no midfield, and he always has to tweak it. So these youngsters for Chelsea are stepping into a situation where they're like, so can you just remind me what the game plan is? Or like, so what, am I in a midfield two or three? Or this, because it changes all the time. Whereas City are very settled. It's much easier for a youngster to step into that scenario.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in that sense, it makes sense for Pep to use the cup in order to get a couple of players in. It doesn't make sense for the Chelsea youngsters to be I don't want to use the phrase, but kind of thrown to the wolves a little bit in this sense, playing the best team in the country and away from home. And, oh, and we don't know what we're doing. Oh, cool.
Baptisms of fire, I think, is probably the phrase I would use to describe it. I mean, Potter's a little bit damned if he does, damned if he doesn't there. Yeah, because if he plays the first team and people get injured, he's like, what? People are like, what are you doing? And, well, why on earth are you focusing on this when the league is clearly the priority and trying to claw our way back into the European places is the moment? But if he throws all the youngsters to it, it's oh God, this Chelsea team are dreadful. So
the lesson here is just don't draw Man City in the cup.
Well, to be fair, it has to be a team from SW6, apparently, because it's been Fulham the last 4 years. So I think that it's about time someone else got a go at playing Man City in the third round of the cup, because that just seemed to be our fate for as many years as I can remember, really. So I will take it. Right.
This isn't a Chelsea podcast, by the way, everyone. Don't worry. We're not going to start every week by talking about Chelsea. It's just that they've been
the big movers so
very
far.
Very topical.
In the market,
yeah, they're the big movers. They're the good story. And, you know, we cannot avoid the chance to talk about João Felix when he's on the brink of a move like that.
Absolutely not. Right, after the break, we are going to be talking players who need new homes and helping them find them. And I'm excited to reveal to you that I'm going to be doing a main ranking. The boys have let me off the leash. So there's plenty
to do. I'm nervous about this.
He gets one a year. He gets one a year. He's cashed his chip in January 10.
I mean, I haven't cashed my chip in. I've been told what to do. And as usual, I have obliged. So we'll leave it there. But after the break, we're going to be talking about all of that. Don't go anywhere.
Got to walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer practice, then there goes the extra time for a jog. That's okay. Maybe next week.
When everyone else relies on you, it's easy to put your needs last. Therapy is a dedicated time to focus on what you need to be happy, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. BetterHelp offers convenient online therapy on your schedule. It's the same professional service you'd get from an in-person therapist, but with the option to communicate when and how you want, by chat, phone, or video call. Go to their site and fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it is time for our main ranking. And today we're going to be looking at five players who are unwanted, unloved, and need a new home. And we're going to be trying our very best to rehouse them. We've done it in order of how unwanted they are, basically. It's how much that they need this move in order to get some minutes and get playing. And I'm going to start us off at number five, where I've put Jafet Tanganga, centre-back, full-back, 23 years old at Tottenham Hotspur.
23 already. Hasn't it flown by?
Exactly.
And he's barely done anything.
About a year. Yeah. He's been since he was 22.
He played the first game back from the World Cup, didn't he? And I remember thinking, oh, Jafet Tanganga. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, he was pulled in that game. Tanganga burst onto the scene a few years back, he looked pretty good from pretty much every perspective, right? He was young, versatile defender. He put in some big performances. I remember making his name with some very impressive displays against both Liverpool and then Manchester City in a game that Tottenham won, and he was man of the match. But he's clearly not in Antonio Conte's plans, even with playing at three at the back, where we thought that right centre-back position seemed to be perfect for him. You know, he's kind of a right-back, centre-back hybrid. Yeah. That felt like the natural fit for him to drop into, but it just hasn't worked out. He's made only three appearances this season. He was pulled, as you say, in that 2-2 draw with Brentford. He got a few minutes off the bench to see off a win against Marseille in the Champions League, and he played 90 minutes against Portsmouth in the FA Cup this weekend. But he's 23 now, and he really does need to start becoming a first team fixture somewhere if we're going to see his potential. So I think he needs a new home. He's probably a little bit too old now for that promising youngster category, isn't it? He's kind of like, oh, you need to get going, my man.
Yes, reports- but But if you cut open his legs, how many rings? Because that's the key, isn't it?
That is true. That is true. But still, I still think he needs to get going. And reports are suggesting that Spurs would be willing to take around £10 million as an offer for him. You'd think that there's a bargain to be had there for the right team. So I've come up with a couple of options where I think Jafet Tanganga should be having a look. And the first of them is Atalanta. Gasperini likes a three at the back, and his right centre back of choice, Rafael Toloi, is excellent, but he's not getting any younger. He's 32 years old. Alas, Smalling and Tomori, I think a Serie A move might just get the best from Jafet Tanganga, and it's not been a brilliant year for Atalanta so far, so perhaps it'd be the kind of environment that he could ease himself into. Yes, it's a little bit rogue, but I like it. You know, I spent a long time looking at clubs that I thought Jafet Tanganga might fit at, and I've decided that I think he'd be a nice fit at Atalanta. He's an aggressive front foot defender. He likes to get after people. He's relatively comfortable on the ball. I just think that Atalanta might be a nice space for Jafet Tanganga, you know, slightly away from the spotlight, slightly away from the pressures of things, to just ease himself back into form and back into a side. So they're my first suggestion.
I like it.
My second suggestion is Roma. I mean, talking of Serie A, it was Mourinho who really took to Tanganga, wasn't it, during his time at Spurs. Roma are in need of defensive reinforcements, and so I think this one might be a goer. Interest was reported in the summer. You'd imagine they're monitoring the situation, and I think Roma feel light at centre-back, considering they play a three-at-the-back system, and that versatility, I think, would be of use to Mourinho. So a reunion with Jose Mourinho at Roma, I think, would be lots of fun. It's probably less out of the spotlight, you'd imagine, than an Atalanta move would be. But a manager that trusted him at Spurs, a manager that saw the potential in Tanganga, and a system that I think he'd fit into quite nicely. I think Roma could be an option, and I think they do have some cash to spend across the course of this window. So yeah, Roma won for me there. And the final option, a little bit of a different tack, is Brentford. This feels like the kind of bargain that Brentford would pick up. You know, obviously Ben Mee is having a good season, but in terms of long-term, buy low, sell high player, Tanganga strikes me, if it is a 10 million offer that Spurs will be looking at, as their kind of deal. Thomas Frank likes to mould formations on the fly. Having a player on the pitch comfortable operating in a number of roles, I think would be a useful puzzle piece in making that easier. And familiar surroundings, remaining in London, could be something that appeals to him in terms of not having to completely up and shift his life cross-country, cross-continent, even cross-city. He'd be able to kind of remain within the city that he currently calls home. So, yeah, they're my three options for Jafet Tanganga. I'm interested to see if there's any more, or which of the three you think would be the best fit.
So you've really keyed in on right centre-back in a three.
Well, no, because Brentford actually play quite a number of formations. I think he'd be quite comfortable at either right-back or centre-back in a Brentford four as well.
So you were talking about staying at home there or staying in City, and I'm looking at Palace and thinking that something at right back may need to change in the future, the near future, with, bless him, Joel Ward still going, but an upgrade possible. Well, maybe Palace, Crystal Palace Culture Club for Jafet Tanganga, the latest in the line.
Yeah, the only thing I have a slight issue with that is that Chris Richards went to Crystal Palace, a player that we like a lot, and has basically not played any minutes whatsoever.
When you peg him as a centre-back, you'd have to peg Tanganga as a right-back in this scenario.
Okay.
You'd have to do that, which may I don't know if it's the right thing to do, but because I think he is better at centre-back. But for him, I guess it's all about minutes right now. That's why Atalanta is actually the best scenario. Of all the ones you've chosen.
Would he be willing to go abroad? I mean, that's the big question, isn't it? Like, not, you know, generally speaking, we talk about the rest of Europe and like we don't think twice really about linking players from any other country to go into another country. But any player that's been established in an English club, we automatically assume they're going to stay or move to another English club. So that's...
Not me, not in this book, not in this
ranking. Yeah, we're changing that now, aren't we, fortunately, which is good.
Yeah, it's starting to change for sure. And I mean, you know, little success stories like Chris Smalling, I think hopefully give players like this an awareness that they can broaden their horizons and definitely improve as people and as players by moving abroad. And it's starting to happen more and more now. So yeah, Tanganga... should be open-minded about what the future will hold, because he does need really a coach and a system that he knows he'll thrive in. The Roman idea isn't the worst, to be fair.
Thanks, mate.
I just don't.
High praise from Dean Jones there.
I don't see him going to Atalanta. That is so rogue.
Oh, it's only about an hour from Milan in a car.
Yeah, the thing I think Dean's probably spot on there is that if you come into,
I don't know who he is.
Yeah, that's true. But if he comes into Roma, right, he's got a manager that he already knows and trusts. He has Chris Smalling in the defensive line who would be able to act as a kind of mentor figure, and Tammy Abraham's there as well. So there's this kind of English speaking core there, which you'd imagine he'd be able to dial into a little bit.
But also at Atalanta, Adamola Lookman is there.
That is true. That is true.
He would not even be like the first Premier League player to make that step to Atalanta. So, you know, there's links everywhere here.
Yeah, there you have it. Yeah. Good. Right. Okay. That's Japhet Tanganga. The reason I put him at five is because I think there might be a chance he could just wait Conte out and the next manager might be like, that guy's actually quite good. Maybe we should play him a bit more. Maybe. Conte clearly just doesn't seem to like him, but I don't think things are perfect at Spurs at the moment. And you can, you know, we've talked about it before that Antonio Conte is a combustible human being, and at sometimes he's just like, right, that's enough, I've had enough of this, I'm moving on. So there is the
chance. Consider Jed Spence instead of Tanganga?
I did consider Jed Spence, but I figure that
he needs a move.
Well, I figure that Jed Spence is probably going to go on loan, because Tottenham wouldn't have bought him in the summer to then sell him again in January.
That's one for Palace can have it. Jed Spence on loan at right back. Well,
one of the reasons I didn't consider this is because one of the honourable mentions, we're going this list in a weird way, but you know, was Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who clearly does need a move, who's linked back to Crystal Palace and would fill the right back void. And so therefore, I kind of just see that one as maybe a given, which is one of the reasons he's one not on the list, and two, why I didn't consider Palace as a place for a right back right now. So no, that was part of that thinking. Right, we're going to move on to number four, where I have put Memphis Depay, striker, 28 years old at FC Barcelona. Memphis decided to stay and fight for his place in the summer, but he hasn't fought for it very successfully. He gave up that number nine shirt for Lewandowski, and even with injuries and suspensions, he hasn't been able to force his way into Xavi's plans whatsoever. He's accumulated 206 minutes this season against Cadiz and Elche in the league, Victoria Plzeňa in the Champions League, and Intercity in the Cup. He's had more minutes in six games for the Netherlands than he has in half a season at Barcelona, even if there are injury issues which have contributed to that. Basically, it's not looking good, Brev. It's not looking good. Xavi has said he's happy with him, but again, this might end up coming down to Barcelona needing to recoup a fee instead of letting him leave for free in the summer. We know Memphis is an excellent footballer. We saw it again in the World Cup when he did get those minutes. He just needs somewhere where his style is going to fit, and I think he thrives more in locations where he really is the main man. I think there's a possibility that he's available relatively cheaply given that expiring contract, although his wages will remain high. So, options. Manchester United. A reunion at Old Trafford still seems like the most appealing option, even if they are interested in getting the Wout Weghorst deal over the line. Maybe they can play two up top, a la Netherlands, and make that work. Ten Hag obviously likes Martial in that nine role. He's talked about before about the fact that the Frenchman's link-up play and his ability to get in behind are both part of the package that he wants with his number nine. I think Depay brings both of those things, and arguably to a higher level. He contributes in build-up phases. He links passing moves together. He's a huge penalty box threat now. And I think Memphis clearly feels that he has unfinished business in Manchester, and he's a very different person and player to the one that joined them in 2015 and left them in 2017. Obviously, you see posts from Memphis, like the one when Wayne Rooney retired, where he was like, really sad I didn't contribute to a higher level when I was playing with this legend. And you're looking at going, yeah, he wants to sort this out, doesn't he? He has eyes on sorting this issue out at Manchester United and feeling like he can actually add something to this team. I think it's probably the most obvious option, the Manchester United one. Obviously, the links have been there, but even more so than those Cody Hakpo links, which we were a bit, not confused by, but I think we were a little bit wary of in the fact that United saw him as a number nine and we weren't completely sure that was where his best position is right now. I think Memphis is fundamentally a number nine at this point. And you're looking at a player here who I think would really fit the way that Ten Hag plays at Manchester United. And I think would bring a lot to the table at this point in his career.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. I mean, look, we'll see what happens with the Veghorst thing. If that was to collapse, then they still need a solution. We know they're not going to spend money here. That's probably the biggest issue, because it sounds like Barca aren't, at one point, like a few months back, it sounded like they might just tear up Memphis's contract at this point and just be like, okay, just move on. Like, that doesn't sound like it's going to happen. So United have to make a decent offer if they were to go and get Memphis. The club seem open to him going, although I think Xavi would want him to be replaced in the squad. That might be the problem here. I don't know.
I think Xavi would like him to stay, but I just don't think Barcelona have the funds to turn down an offer right now.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, obviously, like you say, he's going to be a free agent. So we're approaching the time when a situation like this one becomes very interesting, because there's going to be like 2 weeks or so left of the transfer window very soon. And that's when players start to get twitchy. They start to panic a little bit. And someone like Memphis, like you say, who's clearly already feels like he's got lost time to make up for, is going to be watching another half a season of his career passing by. And that can't happen. It can't happen. Like, this, for this whole season to just pass him by and just say, well, I did play a few games at the World Cup and did all right. That's not enough for him. He's got an ego. Like, he's got a big ego. And like, that's not a bad thing. Like, that's what you need in a forward, especially a player like this. And so, yeah, hopefully someone gives him an outlet, because he needs it.
Yeah, I just like the idea.
Yeah, I'd just be surprised if Barcelona can genuinely afford to get through this month without sort of selling him. Like, it's not really a comment necessarily on Barcelona. It's not a snide comment on Barcelona, although it's obvious that having missed out on the Champions League knockout stages, they probably need to reassess a few things financially after going so close to the bone in the summer. But just like, who, like, which club on earth really, unless they are filthy, filthy rich, which Barcelona are not, which club can really not afford to just like let a player like this go, who played 211 minutes, did you say, Jack?
206.
206 minutes in the first half of the season, a lot of that coming from a cup game against CF Intercity. Like, this is like the definition of an expendable footballer to them. And no matter, like, given the wages that he will inevitably on, like, it just makes sense to sell this player with 6 months left.
The fact that Ansu played through the middle in that game against Atleti at the weekend when Lewandowski wasn't available has got to be a death knell, hasn't it?
Like, surely.
That's the kind of thing you go, well, if Ansu's playing through there, then how do I fit in?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'd really hope that Memphis starts pushing for something here, because we all just want to get to see him play regularly for another top team again and just see him enjoy himself. Because when he's on it, when he's feeling it, when he's smiling, he is a sensational watch, isn't he? So let's get to see it.
Yeah, I'm not figure out where he would fit in the Premier League.
I've got some alternative options.
Okay, go on.
The second is Arsenal, because now it looks like they've missed out on João Félix. Arsenal might well still be in the market for a striker to help them cope with the absence of Gabi Jesus. Now, obviously, Eddie Nketiah is doing beautifully in his absence so far, but you know, this is a long-term injury by the looks of things. And when you've got that going along and you've got that kicking along, it's one of those things you're like, well, what happens if something happens to Nketiah? Who's going to play through that? I mean, arguably Martinelli could play through the middle, but you don't really want to shift a winning system. And so therefore, I think they need cover here. Whether it works long-term for Arsenal or not is maybe a slightly different question. But for now, the fit works nicely. And given the kind of fee being thrown around, it does seem like it would be within their budget. And it's the opportunity to become a spearhead figure in a project right on the up and have a chance at winning titles straight away. I think that would appeal to Memphis now at this point in his career.
I think this makes sense to everybody, to be honest with you. I think it's a great fit for Arteta as a nine. I think it's a great idea for Memphis to go and challenge and step in. Great idea for Arsenal to have the depth. Love it.
I'd be slightly worried about where it leaves Nketiah when everyone's fit, but and what Arsenal's kind of plan for him is long term. But equally, right now, can they afford to throw away the chance of actually challenging for the title that they've put themselves in such a good position for? I don't know. So there's a question marks over that. The third one is one we've touted in the summer, Juventus. I still think this would be a good fit. Yeah, Juve seems like a good spot for Depay to reignite his career. Allegri appears to like playing with kind of two up top and number nine and then a second striker, which would give Depay different options and allow him to play in a similar style to that he plays for Holland at international level. Juventus are winning at the moment, but narrowly. The defence appears to be somewhat sorted, but a new lease of life in attack, I think, would be welcome respite for the Juventus fans. So I still think this works. Maybe not quite as well as the other two, but I do think that there's a place here at Juventus for someone to step up and start a new kind of era in this attack alongside Vlahovic and Moise Kean. So, yeah, I still quite like this one.
Can he score 87th minute goals every week? Because if so, he fits right in.
Yeah. I'm sure he could.
And also, like, Vlahovic's future up in the air. Like, we don't know for sure that he's going to be at Juve next season. There'll definitely be interest in him. So I can see that being the case. I think you've done... Jack, I've got to say, you're doing a good job here. You're doing a good job of your transfer episode. So well done, mate. I do think Arsenal is one that they need... This is what they need to explore. There aren't that many options, backups, that Arsenal can genuinely look at and think, like, this guy is gettable. This is one of the few, as we know, because Man United have been looking at it, that can be done. So... It'll be interesting if they go down that route. I actually think it's likely that they will explore that. I think I really do.
Yeah, I do too. Although I do feel in my heart of hearts that Manchester United is the best option for Memphis. You hear some of the statements he's made about his time there, and he was like, "I blamed Van Gaal. I said he was a dickhead. I blamed Mourinho. I said he was an asshole. You know, I was blaming everyone but myself." I look back and I see that now, and if I had another chance, I'd do things differently. And I'm going, he wants another chance. He definitely wants another chance. So I think that's the one that probably looks like the biggest goer, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that pans out. Right, let's move on to number three, where I've put Houssem Aouar, attacking midfielder, 24 years old at Lyon.
24? Where's it gone?
I know. It doesn't seem that long ago that I was looking at a 55 million euro move, right? And that's because it was last summer. He's had a tumultuous season at Lyon, who sit eighth in Ligue 1. The more vociferous Lyon fans have turned on him. We're seeing posters outside the training ground basically demanding that he starts to perform or he leaves. It's probably worth pointing out that he's not the only one. Jeffrey in Adelaide, Moussa Dembele, Karl Toko Akambi, Thiago Mensch, all targeted too, but still. He's available for free in the summer. So someone could probably get a bargain now, a fee of around 15 million euros being thrown around right now in the French press. 15 million euros down from 55 million euros from one summer. That obviously has to do with the contract, but that's a big hit. It's worth pointing out that he's somewhat reclaimed a starting spot under Laurent Blanc, and he's picked up a minor injury in the most recent game against Clermont. Lyon, though, with Ligue 1 clubs still somewhat cash-strapped, might need to accept a bid rather than losing for free in the summer. He's probably failed to fulfill the expectations lumped on him, but he is still young and is a delight to watch on the ball, balletic at times, an eye for a pass, never flustered. I love watching Aouar play. And it just feels like maybe it's all time up or time at the bar with his hometown club. And I think that whilst there'll be a lot of sadness around that, the fact that he was a local lad who looked like he was the kind of bright young future for Lyon, it might just be time to sever ties on this one. So a couple of options. First up, I put Tottenham in here. I think he'd fill a creative void in the middle of the park for Tottenham. And I think the fit would be good with Bentancur and/or Højbjerg. I think Conte would like him. He's not bereft of defensive work rate. He's robust enough to play in a number of different roles. And I was talking to Chris Hamill on Twitter. He said he's in the top 5% of midfielders in the top five leagues for shots, dribbles completed, touches in the opposition box, and progressive passes received. I think he could be the link man here to get this side firing again under Conte. The risk, obviously, though, that he'd still remain a bit part player, especially with Conte's kind of flicking between a 3-4-3 and a 3-5-2. In a 3-5-2, I think Aouar fits beautifully. In a 3-4-3, I think it's a little bit more ropey in terms of just how he fits into this side, but I still think it would be a nice balance on this. Real Betis, there's long-standing interest from Betis, and considering the success that Nabil Fekir has been at the Villamarín is understandable. I think Fekir in so many ways is kind of our spiritual predecessor at Lyon. And so Betis looking to bring in Aouar makes loads of sense. It does appear, though, that Betis can't move until the summer, which suggests they might be usurped in this window with someone with the cash to spend. Although Betis do look like they're about to sell Alex Moreno for around 12 million euros to Aston Villa, which maybe does actually free up this cash for a move in this department. I think he'd make a nice fit alongside Guido Rodriguez in the midfield here and bring a little bit of creative sparks to this pivot. Betis have been a little bit one-dimensional in midfield at times this season, I think. And when they can keep 11 players on the pitch, it does feel like they need just a little bit more to just start to break teams down who they're struggling against. And Aouar, I think, provides that from the middle of the park. AC Milan. Milan are apparently nosing around this one as well, and you can see why, but I do wonder, because centre midfield doesn't appear to be the area that they're desperately short in. It could help with that creative over-reliance on Rafael Leao and Teo Hernandez in Milan's attacking patterns of play. But my question would be, does it mean even fewer minutes for Yacine Adli, who hasn't really got going at San Siro? And is that something that they'd be willing to put on the table at this point, to spend more on another player who fills a similar creative role, I think, in many ways? And finally, Newcastle United. These links have been prominent, but consensus seems to be that Newcastle would see Aouar as a James Maddison alternative. Now, Dean, I wanted to speak to you about this, because we were talking about the way that Newcastle wanted to utilise Maddison, and we were talking about the fact that they might want to utilise him on the wing. And so if they see Aouar as a kind of Maddison alternative, is that a fit we'd be looking at? Because that makes me uncomfortable. Still, a relationship of sorts with Bruno Guimarães can only be a good thing, and he'd be coming into a project well on the up. So they're my four options for Houssem Aouar. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, primarily that is what they would have in mind for James Maddison if he was to join. Obviously, over time, like, Newcastle's shape will change, and like, Eddie Howe's got other ideas for how this team can play, but at the moment they've got a pretty fixed notion of how this works going forward. Obviously, Alex Isak's deal to come back into the fold there too. So yeah, that's an interesting one. Primarily in this market, Newcastle looking at assigning a forward and a central midfielder, so he kind of fits in there.
Tottenham, they want a centre midfielder, then he's absolutely grand. It's just if they want to play him on the wing. Yeah,
more of a six, though, the central midfielder. I mean, Tottenham is an interesting one. Again, like, I think I've said it on here before, that they feel like they need a player more like Kulusevski if they're going to sign an attacker. And doesn't sound, from what you're saying there, like, you feel like he could fit the Kulusevski role.
No.
Tottenham
are in a funny one there, because, like, obviously, ideally, you get two of the three, don't you, in behind Kane. You get two of Kulusevski, Son, and Richarlison in there, rather than one. So 3-4-3 feels like it should be the dominant formation, which only leaves you two spots in midfield. Mm. When they play 3-4-3 and Kulusevski is injured, then they really lack creativity. So you feel like they need to move to 3-5-2, and that's where they need that player like Aouar. And like we've been talking about this window, we've been talking about how Malinovsky would be a nice pickup there, but he's gone to Marseille.
Like, so that one's deal out. For what
so,
it's worth.
Yeah, so I mean, I like the thinking. The problem for Tottenham there is that, like, you're buying a player for a situation you don't necessarily ever want to be in.
Yeah.
And that on Aouar is, I think that would be a tough sell. But, like, yeah, we want to bring you in to play as one of the eights in 3-5-2. Ideally, though, we don't play that formation because Kulusevski's not injured.
I think he could play in a 3-4-3 against weaker teams. I just don't think you want to, if you're going to play a 3-4-3 against teams that are going to dominate the ball, you need two kind of more hard-working, robust players in the middle. Now, Aouar's defensive work rate is better than I think people give him credit for, but it's definitely not as good as Bentancur and Hoybier's.
No, and those two aren't getting dropped out of the middle. They are a brilliant midfield too. So I'm basically, I'm more or less saying that from Tottenham's perspective, this is a tricky one rather than maybe Aouar. I'll be honest, I've been sat there while you were talking, trying to scratch my head, trying to think of the last time I saw Aouar play, because I haven't seen Leon recently. And I can only picture Nabil Fekir because it's like Aouar wants to be Fekir, you know, wants to be on that trajectory. It's been a while, Aouar. It's been a while.
Get that man to Betis. That's my solution. Use the Alex Moreno money. Stick Juan Miranda in at left back for the rest of the season. Buy Frank Garcia in the summer instead. And buy Aouar now. Get ahead of the punch. Get ahead of the game. Get ahead of the competition. Mm. And just stick him in this midfield alongside Guido, and Betis start to cook, I think.
Well, unfortunately for you, I saw on Twitter this morning that the first player on the list for Betis as a replacement left back is Matias Vinha of Roma. So they may not be going down the route that you've chosen for them.
No, I'll have to message them. I'll have to let them know that they've made the wrong decision there. Anyway, Awar to Betis. That's my decision on Awar. Right, let's go to number two, which is where I've put Keylor Navas.
Oh, here we go. Let's manifest
go
it,
again.
Baby. Come on,
here
then.
We go again. Goalkeeper, 36 years old, PSG. It feels a bit like we're swinging around a well-worn trope, but it's clearly time for Keylor Navas to move on from PSG. Last season, we saw him share duties with Gigi Donnarumma, but with the Italian clearly now the mainstay, surely this feels like the perfect time for Navas to make his final stand in Europe.
Get out of that club, Keylor. Yeah. Get out, get out.
Well, maybe in Europe. Maybe in Europe. We'll come to it. He played 26 times last season while Donnarumma started 17 games, but he's no longer the number one, even if he does hold the shirt. Navas actually made his PSG debut for this season last week in the Coupe de France against Châteauroux, where PSG won 3-1. Captain Costa Rica at the World Cup. He did concede 11 times in three games in the group stages, but I thought he proved his worth, especially in the 1-0 win over Japan, where he made some stunning saves.
He was very, very bad against Spain. And it was said that that was his worst ever performance in a Costa Rica shirt. And then I think he followed it up with possibly one of his best.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, he's got over 120 clean sheets in 300 odd games at the top level. So I don't think there's much question about his quality and caliber. The sticking point might remain that he's on roughly 4 million a year salary, euros. So who has the minerals, the beans to cover that if it's going to be a loan plus a loan fee, you'd imagine. So options. Napoli. Alex Meret remains number one, but Napoli need experience in this side, I think, if they're going to get over the line. And Meret, as we saw last season, is prone to a mistake. There was a link in the summer when PSG signed Fabian Ruiz from Napoli, but the deal didn't get over the line in time. And look, it's a chance to be part of a title challenge, to join a European giant as a last hurrah. I think this ticks all the boxes in many ways. I just don't know if Napoli are going to gamble on bringing in a new goalkeeper and maybe upsetting squad harmony at this point in the season when they've done so well so far
this
season.
Risky,
I mean, obviously,
one,
they lost
it?
Their first game, and that it'd be a bit mad to drop Meret at this point. So he'd be going in as a number two, which is clearly not what he wants to do right now. But with the chance to maybe usurp Meret as number one as it gets to the kind of business end of this season.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world until you remember that changing goalkeepers halfway through a season is just an absolute last ditch scenario for so many top teams, right? It's so difficult. And therein lies Keylor Navas's problem. If he'd have made this switch to Napoli in the summer, which made perfect sense back then as well, I don't think anyone bats an eyelid. He just basically wins the starting job and it's all settled. But making it mid-season is really tough. I think we need to be looking at a club here who are in desperate need of a goalkeeper. They've got a recent injury or a massive problem.
Well, I've got one for you. I've got one for you in the shape of Bayern Munich.
Yeah, so there's a problem with this one as well.
Well, Manuel Neuer's skiing injury puts Bayern in a weird place, doesn't it, in terms of goalkeepers?
You're right, but PSG play Bayern in the Champions League, and I just don't think PSG are going to send Navas to Bayern 1 month before they play him.
No, yes, obviously. That is going to be a sticking point.
And you're totally right in that this is perfect. Perfect, because Neuer went skiing. But if you're PSG, you'd be mad to do this, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, look, just taking that out of it for a second, just in terms of what the fit is, like the question for Bayern is, do they want to use this opportunity, and I say that in inverted commas, to recruit long-term, or is it basically just to fill the gap until Neuer returns? Because if it's the former, then they should be going nowhere near this. Yeah. But if it's the latter, this surely makes the most sense. An opportunity to play for one of Europe's greats, for Navas, and for Bayern, it's a safe pair of gloves to steer them to the title and allow a European challenge this season. Now, obviously, you have to throw the PSG caveat in, and then you have to throw the caveat in to see what Bayern are actually looking for, because it does make sense at some point for them to recruit a long-term successor to Manuel Neuer, who might get 6 months now and then maybe have to sit for a year and then suddenly come back in and be like, cool, that's me. And so obviously they've got the Jan Sommer link on the back burner, but yeah, if they're going short term, then this is clearly the obvious solution,
seems like it. Or recalling Alex Nöbel, but I don't think they're going to be able to do that. I don't think they can get an agreement sorted with Monaco for that one. Or the early reporting is that that's not really been possible. So I think they're actually, unless they can get something over the line for Jan Sommer, I do actually think they are running out of short-term options. of a certain experience or caliber to go and step in and play for Bayern Munich. It's not the simplest task in the world, you know, with the expectation. So, yeah, I mean, if I were them, I would start to cast my eyes towards the long term. But that is a very awkward conversation because Manuel Neuer is a Bayern Munich legend.
Yes, and club captain. It's all quite tricky. Right, I've got a couple more. AC Milan. How bad is Mike Maignan's injury? Because Milan need backup in this area desperately. He's missed so much of this season. He's missed 14 games in all competitions. Milan find themselves 7 points behind Napoli in the title race. Could this be the experience and nous to lift them back into contention? Because I think if they're going to try and retain this crown, they need an upgrade even as a deputy if they're going to be so reliant on said deputy. Because obviously Maignan, it kind of feels like he's like, oh, this week he might be back. And it's like, nope, he's not back. This week he might be back. No, he's not back. And I'm starting to worry about Milan in this area because if, you know, Maignan's injury problems persist and it continues to be his calf that's causing him problems. This is the second time he's been out with a calf injury this season. I think they might just need someone to come in and just steer the ship a little bit. And Navas feels like a really sensible option in that regard. 2 million is, you know, would be the kind of loan covering his salary fee. Obviously, there will be a loan fee on top of that. That doesn't feel like all that much if they're going to, need it to actually push themselves back into title contention.
Yeah, Maignan's calf is troubling us all, isn't it? I mean, every week, you're right. He's close. No, he's not. He's close. No, he's not. I don't know what's going on there at all. And I think it's probably fair to say that I'd have limited faith in Tata Rosciano to see out the title. see out the title is the wrong phrase. They're 7 points behind. To launch them back into that conversation and be such a difference maker as Mike Maignan can be. For Navas, though, it feels cloudy again, doesn't it? It's like, well, you'll call on me if you need me, that kind of thing. That's my current situation. I know he probably gets a couple of games initially, but what happens in February? I'd be cautious around that too. Am I being too protective over our beloved Kayla here, or am I being sensible? I don't know. This is a tricky situation.
Yeah, the final option I've thrown up here is Club America.
Yeah, he did get linked to them the other day, didn't he?
Well, Memo Ochoa has obviously left to go to Salernitana, which is going very well for him. But it's a major opportunity at one of the world's most storied clubs. He'd be closer to home. There's an obvious void to fill. He would go in as number one. The kickback is that reports suggest he might want to stay in Europe for now. But I thought it was one worth bringing up at the very least, because it is an interesting story.
The Club America goalkeeper situation, I have an unusual amount of knowledge of. Due to so rare. And the situation is thus. Ochoa, his contract expired and he decided, you know what, I'm going to go to Europe. And everybody was stunned by that. So as an immediate reaction, Club America bought a goalkeeper called Luis Malagon from Necaxa, I don't know how to say that, who were also in the Mexican first top division. They took their number one off them. And then they've installed him as their backup. And they've given the old backup to Ochoa, the 34-year-old Jimenez, have given him the gloves to start with and said, you guys can battle it out. And then on top of that, they then expressed interest in Keylor Navas. So I'm leaving that one well aside. That is a Mexican soap opera.
It was a Mexican standoff.
Between the sticks. It's absolutely anybody's guess. But I mean, look, expand the conversation, and you've probably got a bunch of teams in South America there that would have a vacancy. And there's a bunch of teams, and I don't know if he wants to go there, but in MLS, which is obviously very close to home, it's very attractive to South and Central American players. There's like three or four of the best teams still looking at goalkeeping solutions. You know, New York City FC don't have a goalkeeper that is actually signed to a contract because Sean Johnson's off touring Toronto. Looking at that, I mean, what about New York City? I mean, it's a pretty cool place to live. There are loads of options for Kayla, even though I've just sat here and done nah to all of them.
Nah, I'm sending him to AC Milan, I've decided. I think that's actually the spot.
I think Leicester should go for him. They need a goalie.
They desperately need a goalkeeper. I don't think that quite has the prestige of being like, oh, Milan could do this.
He has not forgotten that.
Reigning Italian champions, AC Milan, I think are the best bet for Keylor Navas. So I'm going to leave it there. And we'll move on to number one, which is Rick Karsdorp.
Here we go.
Right back, 27 years old at AS Roma. There has been a complete and utter breakdown of relations at Roma between Karsdorp and Mourinho, and that has led to him being exiled from the squad. It looks like irreparable damage, so Roma are going to have to sell, and yet the situation means the fee remains cheap. There's still a good player in there. I think he's better offensively than defensively, and shock horror, we've seen the best of him at wing-back rather than full-back. But I think at this point in his career, he's a relatively solid all-rounder. There's plenty of clubs on the hunt for a right-back, not including Crystal Palace for obvious reasons. So you'd imagine there will be suitors, although a permanent deal, I think, is what Roma are demanding at this point in the window. So, options. Juventus. Short at right wing back and definitely interested. Their main question seems to be over whether Roma would sell to a direct top four rival in Serie A right now. They have a real crushing need for cover in that right side of defence. Danilo feels more like Allegri sees him as a centre back these days, for better or for worse. And Weston McKennie has been filling in at right wing back in recent times. Karsdorp brings Serie A experience and nous. He gets Juve ahead of the game on the fact that Cuadrado is 34 now and his contract expires in June. This one does seem to make sense as a short-term option, but if Roma want a permanent deal, I don't know where that leaves Karsdorp if Juve then go in to find an upgrade in the summer. But I think right now it feels like a really obvious solution. Inter also need cover for Denzel Dumfries, which has been in relatively short supply. So Karsdorp could join Mkhitaryan in switching Giallorossi for Nerazzurri. There's an international relationship. Karsdorp and Dumfries will know each other well from international duty. Plus, De Vrij adds a real Dutch presence in that camp. Similar look to Juve in both pros and cons. Would Roma sell to a direct rival? But if they will, there's Serie A experience and wing-back nous that would both come in handy. I've gone next for my beloved Fulham, who are desperate for cover at right-back. Kevin Mbabu has been deemed absolutely not up to scratch by Marco Silva. And Kenny Tete's injury history is a little bit patchy. Karsdorp obviously has that relationship with Tete as well over international duty. They've been competing for starting berth before in the Dutch national team. But there is a potential question mark over whether he'd suit a return to a back four at this point in his career. And finally, I've thrown Feyenoord in here. Obviously came from Feyenoord, went back there on loan. That last return didn't go brilliantly, but Feyenoord are on a slightly unheralded title charge in the Netherlands with a relatively youthful team. Right-back Marcus Pedersen is excellent, but he's also in pretty high demand. Saints are reported to have inquired in the summer, and there's a few others keeping an eye on that situation. Karsdorp would give them experience and depth going into title races as they attempt to lift the trophy for just the second time this century. You know that they've only won it once since the century turned. Yeah, Karsdorp, a couple of options. I'm sure there's more than this, but they're the four that I picked out for him. Two, if he'd like to stay in Italy. One, if he'd like to have a go at the Premier League. And one, a joyous homecoming as Feyenoord look to try and lift the title.
I mean, it's been made pretty clear that he won't play another game for Mourinho. So from one perspective, it's just like, yeah, to all of them, anywhere will do. This is anything. And Roma will be, I mean, penny for the thoughts of the general manager at Roma here, Thiago Pinto, who must be like, well, the absolute last thing I want to do is handle a transfer that sees Rick Karsdorp go to Juventus when we're both in the same fight for a Champions League place. But Mourinho is kind of solving down the river here because he's been so incredibly public and clear about how Rick Karsdorp has no future. So like, I just have to get rid of him. Like, and if Juve are the only ones that end up going to the table, then what choice does he really have? So that's a really tough situation for Roma to be in, really. But for Karsdorp, hopefully it should mean that it's so abundantly clear that he's for sale that, you know, the offers start coming in and he finds something. And I think anything, literally anything will do.
Is he better than Wan-Bissaka?
Attacking, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
probably not defending, though.
No.
He'd
be more suited to.
I would really not like seeing Wan-Bissaka at right wing back for Roma. Things I never want to see.
No, that sounds awful.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka at right wing back.
Were you going to suggest a swap, Dean?
Yeah, I said swap.
Yeah, no, thanks.
But I'll tell you what, Fulham and Roma straight swap deal. Kevin and Babu for Rick Karsdorp.
Who says no?
Who says no?
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly going to Crystal Palace, this guy, isn't he? So it's all right.
Okay. All right. Well, anywhere will do for Rick Karsdorp. That basically brings to an end the rankings, but I just did want to mention a few honourable mentions. Real Madrid's out of contract lost lads, Mariano Diaz, Alvaro Odriozola, and Dani Ceballos. I don't think anyone's actually going to leave Real Madrid. Ancelotti has basically come out and said he wants to use the squad until the end of the season, but all three of these are out of contract in the summer. So you'd imagine that if a right offer came in, I think especially for Odriozola, then maybe they would have a look at it. A couple of lads marooned in Portugal, Yovane Cabral and Lucas Veríssimo. Veríssimo in particular is quite interesting. Had a really good spell for Benfica, but got a long-term injury and has just not been able to force his way back into the plans. So I think anybody who's looking for a centre-back could do a lot worse than looking at Lucas Veríssimo. Anyone need a full-back? Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Brandon Williams, remember him? Once gave Christian Eriksen a hug. I think that's basically what he's most known for these days. And Nico Schulz, who Sam had actually forgotten existed, is at Dortmund still. But if anyone needs a left wing back, feels like he is on the market. And then there's the sort of out of favour wing boys. Gelson Martins at Monaco has struggle for minutes. Hakim Ziyech, I think, still probably on the table if anyone was trying to get him out of Chelsea. And Thomas Lemar, who I did originally have in the ranking, but Sam made the very good point that if Joao Felix leaves, are Atleti going to need him? And I think the answer is probably yes. He's also, though, out of contract in the summer. So I think the right offer for Thomas Lemar might actually interest
Atleti. They spent so much money on him, didn't they?
Oh, 72 million euros, I believe.
72 million euros, and he could leave for free.
Yeah. So that's their interest. They were my honourable mentions. And with
times.
That, we come to the end of the main ranking.
Well done, mate. Well, we'll see you next year. But that was really good. We really enjoyed it. And you did
it was
it
so long that it took me a year to actually write it.
Well, good vision there and what was going to be in place for this moment.
Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you very much. Right, after the break, we've got Medal of the Week and the Gibberish Rankings. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC part 3 here, and we start as ever with Mr. Dean Jones.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Adam Lafondra.
Yeah.
So Adam Lafondra, he plays for Sydney FC and he missed two penalties against Wellington Phoenix, who only had 9 players on the pitch but were 1-0 up. Now the first penalty came after a handball decision. The keeper makes a save. Lafondra's thinking, oh no, I've missed my chance. But from the follow-up, like literally seconds later, really, Sydney are trying to force the ball back towards the goal. There's another handball that leads to another penalty being awarded, and Adam Lafondra gets the chance to make amends for his miss. So second pen, Alf standing there, goal waiting in front of him. He's thinking, what shall I do? He does a Harry Kane. He skies it. It's worse than Harry Kane. He goes miles over. Rubbish. Absolute melon. He just crumples into the floor. Wellington keepers jumping up and down. They're all going crazy. They pulled off the 1-0 win. That's melonish behaviour. Missing two pens in added time.
Was it like 95 and 97 or something?
Especially because the first one isn't a penalty. So I was really glad that it was justice, wasn't it? That he didn't score. But the second one is absolutely melon. I loved watching this. Come on, you Knicks. Stand up with your Knicks, as far as I'm concerned. Right, Dean, let's add some positivity.
It's time for Shout Out of the Week. And this week's Shout Out of the Week is Taran Kim, who's actually one of our patrons. So this is an elite all-star of the rank squad, and he actually sent in a message. He said, look, I'm not an Apple user, so I gave you 5 stars on Spotify instead, and here is my submission as to what I would write as your review. By the way, this is totally fine. If you listen on Spotify, please do give us 5 stars on there. That is as legit. Now he says, I've been following Ranks since mid-2020, and I can honestly say it's the most joy I get from any of the phone-related content I subscribe to. I'm tempted to make a joke here. I'm not going to. He says, the secret to a great podcast is being inviting while also rewarding those who listen and subscribe by making them feel in on it. allowing them to get to know the hosts and genuinely feel engaged. You boys give such great insight on the beautiful game, but the things that stick with me most is when I find myself laughing out loud at the three of you just shooting the shit together. During last week's melon segment, Smash It Top Bins had me absolutely floored, and I thought about it today and I laughed out loud again. Those little moments stick with you and they make me so excited for the days of the week a new pod is released, which of course is 3 days a week if you're with us on Patreon, more at the moment because of our special transfer episode. He says, thank you for what I can say fairly confidently. It's a lot of work for you guys for not nearly enough financial payback and for loving it so much to keep us engaged regardless. I'll finish with a tidbit about myself that I've been meaning to reveal for a while. For the first year of listening to this pod, I was convinced that It's Time for Melon of the Week was a pre-recorded bit of Dean that was just the same every week. And I was stunned when I realized it wasn't. Thanks, Rank Scott. Yeah.
That's how consistent you are, huh?
Yeah, that's a real compliment. I think that might be going on my CV that I can pull that off so consistently that you thought for a year that it was a recording. Thanks, mate.
Very good. Very good.
Get your reviews in now, people. Please do on Apple, Spotify.
And just maybe look at the Spotify thing, actually. 1,300 star reviews on Spotify with an average of 4.9. People doing the Lord's work over here.
Not bad.
Go on, Rank Squad. Go on, Rank Squad. It's paying off, lad.
That's the gibberish siren.
It was a long one.
Sometimes maybe do. I felt like I had to make up for last week's really poor attempt. So,
well, the people do actually like the pathetic ones, don't they?
Yeah, well, I'm not feeling pathetic today. I'm actually feeling pretty good today. Okay. Feeling in the ascendancy, in the hot seat, in the driving, you know, with the wheel.
Yeah, riding high after a great ranking. There's no better feeling.
Bosh.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, it is time for gibberish. And this week, actually, it's kind of a ranking, but it's more a wider conversation about how little attention I pay to going through my email inbox and getting rid of all those nasty subscription emails that you end up on the back of, and how little attention I pay to the rising number of unread emails that would probably send some people just over the, like, through the looking glass. Honestly, like, it's got 71,000 unread emails in my personal account, which does feel high now I think about it, actually, and a bit nervous. But rest assured, most of them come from companies like the ones I'm going to talk about right now. And I've actually just gone through and picked out some of the strangest emails I get on a recurring basis. So at number three, it's whichever overarching group owns O'Neill's Pub.
Now, it's O'Neill's.
No, it's because it's, well, maybe, but it's O'Neill's is maybe the group, but they have obviously O'Neill's Pub. And I think I signed up to something there at the establishment in Carnaby Street about 8 years ago, and I've been receiving emails from O'Neill's ever since. But they also send me emails from all of their other establishments as well. And that includes Miller and Carter Steakhouse, the Toby Carvery, the Ember Inns Pub down the road. It's, I've got more than 100 emails from, and some of these places I've actually never been to or haven't been to in 5 years or so. And I had a look through. I've got all the offers in the world from this. You sign up for one thing in one place and you get emails from 9 different other establishments for the next 3 years. It's terrible out there.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. It's tough out there.
Really tough. So I've unsubscribed from that one. That one's done. At number two, I'm still getting emails from football clubs, some of which I haven't been to see for a long time, some of which I've never even been to. And I don't really understand this one. So first of all, I found that I'm still getting emails from Djurgårdens, who are a Swedish club that I went to watch in 2016. I've been unable to translate the emails to find out where the unsubscribe button is, so I still get those, unfortunately. I also get emails from LAFC every week.
I reckon this is Dean Jones's work.
But okay, maybe he signed me up, but I've never shown any interest in LAFC. I've never been to LA. Why do I get an email from them every single week?
I don't know, mate. I don't know.
I also get them from all sorts of places, like Fulham and Southampton and Chelsea and all that. Like,
anywhere you bought a ticket.
Anywhere you've bought a ticket, you just get them. But LAFC,
I get them from hotel football at Old Trafford quite a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But LAFC just stuck out to me as that makes no sense. I've never even been to the West Coast. Anyway, the weirdest one in there is W.J. King. Now, you may not know what this is, I really don't blame you. It is a group of local garages or repair places for cars. I took my car there for a service, mandatory, according to my lease. And I don't know what they entered me into the system as in terms of like my status or my job, but I've been getting like very strange emails from them, stuff that you would not expect to get from your local repair garage. First of all, they sent me an offer for 2 years complimentary roadside assistance, which I thought was a bit odd because, well, I don't need it because it's part of the lease, but I don't know why. I don't know what qualifies me for that. Then I got an invitation as a VIP to one of their sales conventions. I thought, okay, bit odd. Don't think I need to go to that. Not involved in the car industry at all. And then this Christmas, I got invited to their winter ball. Like,
nice.
What did W.J. King think I am? Who do they think I am?
Wait, they think a local celebrity. They looked on Twitter and saw you had a blue tick and quite a lot of followers, and they were like, wow, we should get this guy involved.
Wow, the blue tick's worthless now, don't they know? Unbelievable. Mm. The winter ball, I should have gone. Would have been unbelievable. Yeah.
It would have been lit.
Unbelievable. But anyway, this is a nice annual reminder for everybody to go through their inbox when they get 10 minutes and sift out all the crap. Look for all the rubbish and unsubscribe to as many as you can so your phone just doesn't go bling, bling, bling all day long.
Yeah. Nextdoor is the one that sends me so many. I'm like, yeah, that's got to go, I'm afraid. I just can't remember my password to log in to unsubscribe. So unfortunately, I'm stuck with Nextdoor emails from an area I don't even live in anymore. But alas, here we are. Mm. Here we are. I think that's probably all we've got time for here, though, on Ranks FC. So all that's left for me to do is to say thank you to you all for listening as ever. Thank you so much to our rank god, Mr. Sam Tai.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you so much to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you to me for all my hard work today. I've been Jack Collins,
thank you, mate.
Knave of Hearts. And thank you, as ever, for tuning in. We'll be back, of course, next week. Although, if you do join us on Patreon, there's going to be more from Dean's transfer show and, of course, the spotlight later in the week as well. The link, as ever, is in the description. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.